so why don't we begin? We're happy to have Nick Blount here from who recently got his PhD from University of Oregon.
So I am presenting research I did towards my PhD, and my talk today is on searching for invisible decays of the B0 meson using data from the Babar experiment. So, as an introduction, invisible in this case means particles that will pass through the detector without being detected. In the standard model, the invisible particles are the neutrinos, being long-lived light and having very low interaction cross-sections. But if you go beyond the standard model, there is good prospect for finding additional invisible particles. My hope was that they would be light enough to be accessible to B0 decays. And what I think is the most exciting reason to look for these is that one of the greatest mysteries in particle physics is dark matter, which makes up a large part of the matter of the universe, and we don't actually know what it consists of. But any invisible particles we discover would be good candidates for it. However, Z0 decays have put strong constraints on invisible particles lighter than 90 GeV. And so any invisible particles found in B decays would have to work hard to get around that. So first I'll talk about invisible B decays in the standard model. So to lowest order, this would be a doubly weak decay, two neutrinos. And the problem with this is that it is helicity suppressed. Therefore the branching fraction goes as the neutrino mass squared, and the problem is that neutrinos have very low masses. B to nu nu bar would be pretty much undetectable at any B factory we could imagine because of this helicity suppression. I also look for B to nu nu bar gamma because the photon breaks the helicity suppression and therefore allows the branching fractions to come up to more reasonable levels. And so here I have some Feynman diagrams of what B2 nu nu bar looks like. So this slide summarizes again what I said, that B2 nu nu bar is helicity suppressed because of constraints on neutrino masses to less than a couple electron volts. It would be unmeasurable, but B2 nu nu bar gamma has branching fractions up to 10 to the minus 9, which is still below what we're able to measure at Babar, but at least approaches the measurable.
Did you have that as one of the Feynman diagrams on the previous page? What did you have?
These are just B2 nu nu bar. The only difference is that one of the charged lines in the diagram emits a photon. So one possible enhancement to the rate of B2 invisible would come from large extra dimensions. So large extra dimensions is a theory that helps solve the hierarchy problem. By adding the extra dimensions, you can lower the true Planck mass and therefore answer the question why the Higgs mass doesn't blow up to the scale of the Planck mass. And so it would be done by extra dimensions of size R and dimension D, and you could get a Planck mass that's, from what we see, from a much lower mass M star. So why this is interesting is that if neutrinos could propagate in these extra dimensions, you could obtain you get, among other things, the light neutrino masses, explaining why the neutrino masses are so much lower than that of the other massive particles. And it would also greatly enhance the rate of V2 invisible. And therefore, that could be one explanation if I were to find something in my V2 invisible search. Any questions so far? So another possibility is for invisible particles other than neutrinos that are accessible by V decays. And one very promising avenue for this is supersymmetry, which has a particle corresponding to every standard model particle, and the neutralinos, which correspond to the neutral gauge bosons, if they were light and long-lived, would be good candidates for invisible particles. And
let's see, can we go back? I'm looking at this. Is that...
So these particular decays I will talk about more on subsequent slides.
Those must be R parity.
Yes, these are R parity violating, and so I'll talk more about why I have these particular diagrams in the next slide.
I thought that looked a little too simple.
Wrong way. So one reason why this avenue is interesting is because at the NUTEV experiment they saw a slight excess in dimuon events, which was a 3-sigma fluctuation, which probably is just a random fluctuation, but could be a sign of something else. And one thing it could be a sign of is neutralino production. And the explanation for this is that B mesons produced at the source for the neutrino beam, B mesons are produced that decay into R-parity violating neutralinos, which are long-lived and therefore make it to the NUTEV detector before decaying into dimuons. And if this were the case, then you should be able to see this at the B factories as a invisible B decay.
So, I guess I didn't remember this result. So is this the simplest? Oh, this is the Tala thing. Okay. Is this the simplest explanation for these muon events?
The simplest explanation is, of course, a random fluctuation.
But what about just some standard model production of these muons? I see it. They have to be produced mm-hmm. way down the beam pipe. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a very yeah. suppressed decay.
Mm-hmm.
For
well,
so you have R parity violation, but a very small coupling.
Yeah.
And
so what's NUTEV is a neutrino detector, so what
mm-hmm.
should be at the detector is just neutrinos, which shouldn't decay into two muons.
Sure.
What is the mass of these events?
So the neutralinos I'm talking about are in the 4.5 to 5.
Those three events, where was this excess? In what mass range?
The dimuon mass?
Yeah, the dimuon mass, right.
I don't recall.
Okay.
But was there was some unifying feature that lends credence to this hypothesis that they cluster at some mass, or anyone remember?
Oh, I don't think.
Three body decay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So here is a equation giving the cross section of such a decay. And so if I were to measure invisible B decays, I could give some constraints. Or if I were to measure an upper limit to the invisible B decays, I could give constraints on this particular theory. So here's a graph that's showing for a given neutralino lifetime and a given branching fraction for the neutralino production, the expected number of events that would be seen in
the
show.
Just the mass and the lifetime were the two free
mm-hmm.
parameters in the previous equation? So the coupling and the lifetime are...
I think it's just saying that the only thing that determines the number of events is the lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
has lots of parameters. Have I got
mm-hmm.
that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the range of lifetimes you're interested in because of the length of your decay volume or the
mm-hmm.
new tail. It's about a mile or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So next slide. So this experiment was done at the Babar B factory, which is an asymmetric electron-positron collider. The electrons and positrons are stored in these two beams and then collided in the middle of the Babar detector. Being a lepton machine, it's a very clean environment for looking for invisible decays. Basically, all that's produced is a B anti-B meson pair, and so if you can tag one B meson, everything else is what's produced by the other B meson, in which case I'm looking for a lack of anything else. So at the Babar experiment, over the course of its run, it produced 227 million B0-B0 pairs, with the luminosity of 531 inverse divined integrated luminosity. So just a quick overview of the Babar detector. There's a silicon vertex detector followed by surrounded by a drift chamber used for tracking. There's a Cherenkov detector for particle identification, an electromagnetic calorimeter, and then the instrumented flux return, which contains a muon detector and hadron detector.
I was just curious, because nobody ever mentions it. You said 500 mm-hmm. and something inverse femtobarns.
Mm-hmm.
What was the delivered? I mean, is this integrated over the lifetime of Babar? Is it,
mm-hmm.
it 90% of what was created? Was reported, or what's
higher than that? I think it's in the upper 90%.
Upper 90s. Things really very smooth and running.
Mm-hmm.
What event rate does it correspond to?
It's
not important, I'm just curious.
So I think the level 3 trigger, which is the recorded event rate, is 100 on the 100 of hertz rate.
Okay, that's right. And what fraction of that is physics, and what is jump?
Oh, that's the recorded information, so it's hopefully mostly physics.
Oh, it is.
It's the stuff that is triggered as interesting events. Of course, that includes non-B events, because there are people at Babar interested in
Two-photon
physics is fairly messy and not very studied, but like tau decays and...
Okay. That's not the upside on 800, that's very fast.
Well, the rate of CC bar and tau are comparable to the BB bar rate. So it's actually a pretty good machine for looking at such things. Okay, so for my particular analysis, I'm looking for one of the B pairs. So one B would be a normal B and the other would be an anti-B. I'm looking for one decaying into hadrons and the other decaying into invisibly or invisible plus one photon. And as I said before, since it's a lepton machine, all the event is characterized fairly cleanly. You know the expected momentum of the two Bs and their energies. And so once you tag one B, you know quite well what the other one is. So more specifically, I take a D or a D star and add pions and kaons in order to form a B candidate, looking for just combinations that have the correct invariant mass and energy for being from a B decay. And purity just means looking at particular modes that are not background dominated.
So what's the classic signature for the D?
So the cleanest D would be to K pi pi.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a few modes that are KK, but most of them are K plus some number of pions. And so, more specifically, the two variables used to characterize tagged Bs for many events at the Babar detector are the beam-constrained mass and the difference in energy. So these are calculated in the epsilon for S rest frame. And so you just want the B to have half of the B, half of the energy and mass consistent with a neutral B meson.
This is standard reconstruction for P0.
Mm-hmm. Especially hadronic, where you don't have any missing energy from neutrinos. And so here, first you find how many tag Bs you have. So here I have a plot showing MES for events. The combinatoric are the various colors. Data are, these are combinatoric Monte Carlo. Data is in black, and this white area is the correctly tagged Bs. And so using that, I can look at the final number of events and get an efficiency.
So that's times 10 to what? 8? 6? The number of events?
10 to the 6th.
And I'm sorry, I just missed it on the previous slide. What is ES? Is that the D?
MES is the beam constrained mass.
The beam constrained mass.
And so I get 500,000 tagged events as my sample to search for invisible decays in. And I use Monte Carlo to correct the number of tagged events for the difference in expecting tagged efficiency for invisible decays over versus generic B decays. Because the more stuff you have in the event, the better chance of reconstructing a B using something from the other side.
This is the full data set, right? This is all path and inverse ad over. Okay.
Yes. So you lose quite a few events by doing the tag.
What is that? You say you have 200 million Bs, right? And you tag half a million.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good?
Sounds
low, right?
It's fairly low, but I chose this method because it's a very clean tagging sample. So I can know that the Bs I have are correctly tagged Bs for the most part. It helps a large part in cutting down backgrounds. So there was another analysis similar to this done at Babar using leptonic tags, which has a better efficiency but higher backgrounds, and so needed tighter cuts on the signal side in order to beat down the backgrounds. So the actual results are comparable.
So what is the estimate of contamination in the half a million? Is it how many non-Bs have sneaked through?
Do
you measure that?
So that's measured in the, well, I have systematic errors on that as well,
okay.
But
okay,
it's
okay.
On the order of a few percent.
Oh, still a few. Okay,
so after I tag a B, I then define the remainder of the event as the signal side, where the signal side consists of charge tracks and neutral objects. For the beta invisible plus gamma, I take out the highest energy neutral from the event and require it to have energy greater than 1 GeV. And then I have a cuts on MES and neutral energy to define a signal box, where I will look for signal limits. Oh, did look for signal limits. So I optimized my variables using this figure of merit, which was chosen to balance the prospects of finding a signal with the desire to obtain a good upper limit.
Where does this 3x come from? I mean, I guess you're saying it's optimized, but...
So it's optimized at the for finding something at the 3 sigma significance.
So if you wanted to be riskier, you would have put a 5/2 there or something?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay. So this is a standard additive factor?
It's somewhat uncommon, but it is not horribly controversial. There are a few other analyses in the group I was working with who did the same thing.
Does Babar have a statistics committee that kind of puts you through the ringer on how you do these things? Or?
It does have a statistics committee, and they didn't object to that.
But just in general, do you have to? They just give recommendations, or how active a role do they play in?
They mostly give recommendations. So I don't think there's not a specific statistics part of the review process.
Okay.
So the variables I optimize over are the number of charge tracks, the number of charge tracks that are required to come from the interaction points, the total neutral energy on the signal side of the event, the number of reconstructed pi zeros, and R2, which is a combinatoric suppression variable. It's an event shape.
What's the scattering Z of the IP? Is there much at all? I mean, at a Hadron collider, of course,
yeah,
it's huge.
I think it's a few millimeters.
Mm-hmm. It's a crossing.
No, we do not use a crossing angle.
No,
Bell does. We have head-on collisions.
But all of the Zs of these collisions and the productions are within a couple of millimeters of the nominal Z equals zero. Is that
So for B10 invisible, I do use the same cuts, except for the highest energy photon is not included in the total neutral energy, and it has its own optimization. So here are the systematic errors. I'll go through them quickly. I use various control samples that are required to include an electron, muon, or kaon that are then removed from the event. I also scale the Monte Carlo to the data in a couple sidebands and use the uncertainty of that scaling as a systematic. For signal, I get a systematic by tagging both Bs in the event using the hadronic method and then treating everything else in the event as being the invisible signature, and check the Monte Carlo ability to model that. And also for beta invisible plus gamma, I use a photon reconstruction efficiency.
So you're saying you have no background? All your background is systematic?
This is just summarizing the systematic errors. On the next slide, I'll give the results, including statistical and systematic.
So what was your background?
So that I'll get to that on the next slide. Well, I can go to it quickly. So the predicted background is 28 events for beta invisible and 14 events in beta invisible plus gamma.
Okay.
And what is that? Where is that 20 year coming from?
Mostly it's just common events with a lot of particles that were missed going down the beam pipe, and then misreconstruction of the tag B. Those events also typically involve, or commonly involve, neutral kaons or leptons producing particles that are hard to detect, or neutrinos, which are impossible to detect. But basically, it requires stuff going down the beam pipe.
Just go back to the previous transcripts in a moment.
This one?
So B0 into invisible was 11 times 10 to the minus 5. How does that compare to old limits?
So the only results on this were from what I mentioned before, the other Babar B10 visible analysis that used the semi-leptonic method. And it measured, where did I put them? And it obtained those limits. So
before it was 22 and 4.7?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's
11
and 4.3.
Right, so the invisible went down substantially by a factor of 2. The invisible plus gamma is almost the same.
Yeah. Well, didn't help that I saw less events than...
Right, so I was trying to do the math here. So the predicted is sort of 2 to 1, invisible plus gamma, and observed is substantially different, huh?
So I did not actually measure a significant number for either channel.
Sure.
So how do you do that? This must be, I'm not sure if you're going to go into details, but you estimate 28 events. What do you have to do to get that number? You have to generate every possible decay of the beam, and then see what fraction send down the beam pipe?
Babar has a fairly extensive Monte Carlo simulation that, half of B decays have been measured, and then the rest are modeled just by knowing the number of tracks and other particles that are common in B decays. And then I did very numerous studies comparing the Monte Carlo simulation to data to check that the predictions it was giving were reasonable. And then I applied my analysis to the various Monte Carlo samples to get those predicted backgrounds.
So then the 7.8, the error is your statistical error in that estimate.
Yes, that is the statistical error. And the 9.2 is systematics.
Which is what in this case? It's not knowing the branching ratio and things like that. That's pretty large systematics.
The systematics are mostly just from the ability to, the confidence in the Monte Carlo to accurately predict the data.
So you showed us that on the tables. Why don't you go back to that so we can try to understand it. So it's these big numbers in the middle, is that right? These 15%?
It's a combination of this number and this number.
Why you just separated them into different categories, but they're
And this is standard Babar number. Any analysis I do where I need to figure this acceptance out for something like this, I get order 25% statistical, 25% systematic.
These are larger than usual systematics because this is a rare decay, and Therefore, the Monte Carlo is less well established, and the number of events I have to work with for establishing its trustworthiness is also small. But on the other hand, for a rare decay like this, the statistical errors are also large, and therefore I'm able to keep the systematics of comparable size to the statistics. And another thing to note is that
you went as far as when your statistical error dropped below systematic and you quit.
Mm-hmm.
In the next page.
You mean vice versa? I mean, you have a certain statistical error. You want to run your background.
But you can keep adding more events to suppress statistics. But I think it's statistically just below systematics.
The statistics are a little below the systematics. So I intended this analysis to be fairly conservative. Since the previous analysis saw a 2 sigma excess in one of its channels, I wanted to either prove or disprove its whether there was anything there. And so I wanted to, first of all, use an independent method for doing the analysis as well as calculating the systematics, as well as do a conservative analysis so that my numbers could be trusted. And so I could have probably used smaller systematic errors, but I instead chose to be more conservative.
Is there was there talk that the 2 sigma results in the previous analysis was not trustworthy, like they might have underestimated the systematic?
No. It was just a normal analysis with a slight excess in one of its channels. I just wanted to do a more conservative analysis in order to complement the previous one.
Mm-hmm. How much data was in the previous one?
That one was on I think about 100 million BB bar events. So I have more than twice as much data in mind. So as we have already seen, here are my results. I see a number of events in the single box. It is comparable to the number predicted by the Monte Carlo simulation. And I get the following branching fractions using TOIM Monte Carlo trials. Here is MES and neutral energy with the Monte Carlo in colors and the data with the bars. So for EMU, the single area is the lower bins, and for MES, the single area is these upper 2 bins.
Sorry, what are the 4 plots? So we've got.
So this is the MES plot.
Yeah.
For V10 visible and V10 visible plus gamma.
Okay.
So the area you expect the peaking events to be in is the upper 2 bins.
Mm-hmm.
The lower plot is neutral energy for V10 visible and V10 visible plus gamma. And for invisible events, you expect little neutral energy, so you're looking at the bottom couple bins.
So magenta.
It does seem to be a little bit of excess in the appropriate bins in the
mm-hmm.
invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, there is a slight excess.
And that's what you were saying when you
yes.
numbers, okay. So that's the same numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
This
but
just
in the right bin,
shows you where the events are.
Can you go back to the previous slide?
So be the invisible, expect 28 events, see 39. Be the invisible plus gamma, expect 14, see 8.
Now, would you have expected, if you saw this in the pure invisible, would you have expected to see an excess in the invisible plus gamma?
Well, since whatever would cause an excess would have to be new physics. It depends on what the new physics that was causing it would be.
That's sort of what I'm asking.
Most likely I would expect it, since being invisible plus gamma I would expect to be the invisible just with a radiated photon.
Mm-hmm.
Although it depends on the mass of the invisible particle, because I do require the photon to be fairly energetic.
But in that case, if you're saying what you just your argument,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't that hold if it were not new physics and something modeled incorrectly? You would also expect, you know, the standard model and something was modeled
mm-hmm.
incorrectly, that once again you would expect it to scale with the radiated
mm-hmm.
photon.
Well, except that this standard model is about 10 orders of magnitude below what I can measure for being invisible.
Anyway, right, gotcha.
So anyway, if the invisible chi 1 were up near the D mass, then this
mm-hmm.
would still be a real effect.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, okay. If I add up the two numbers on each of those bullets, they agree with each other.
What is the sigma that you get for that 3/2 formula here?
So that signal over square root of 3/2 plus background, or 3/2
yes,
plus square root
like
of background, it's basically intended to be kind of a hybrid of a signal over square root of signal plus background with signal over square root of background.
So, I mean, why don't you just take that 39 divided by 3/2 plus square root of 28?
Well, that figure of merit I mentioned before is just for optimizing the cuts. It doesn't actually come into these numbers.
Oh, I'm sorry, 39 minus 28. So. Okay, so you don't do it this way. Okay. So you do it both ways. You report it as a positive measurement or an upper limit.
Well, in my when I publish, the main result is going to be the Bradshaw fractions. These are the upper limits. The Bradshaw fractions are not significant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you go back to the plots? I did want to look at Scaramet.
Mm-hmm.
The plots. I'm sorry, I'm falling page. Everything looks really blocky, but
mm-hmm.
we're just...
Well, the statistics are fairly low.
The statistics are low, and so this is pretty appropriate, huh, to...
The main thing to note are the excess in the signal region and that the sidebands, the data in Monte Carlo, are in acceptable agreement.
Sure. But the backgrounds should all be pretty smooth, right? Or not necessarily, so...
Well, should be within statistics.
Just the amount of statistics.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the upper right, your CC bar, that's the yellow?
CC bar is yellow.
Saying that the backgrounds are smooth, what you see there is that
but
the
not.
Purple, let's
yeah.
take the upper left,
okay.
purple
mm-hmm.
background prediction is very low in that last bit. That's presumably some kind of phase space or
mm-hmm.
something. You know, where it's
well, you don't expect the purple to be smooth in MES because the peaking BB bar events will be in these events, so you expect there to be more purple there. But in this region, you expect the backgrounds to be smooth.
So that's C20, expect 5 in that thing? Is that
I can't read the numbers, but it
mm-hmm.
looks like
yes.
something
yes.
like that. So that, I mean, if you just
right.
take
and
that
the bin before it,
in the bin
before it, the
that's
data is below the Monte Carlo, which makes it a less significant result than just the top bin would get.
The signal is sort of those last two bins, is
mm-hmm.
that right?
Yes.
That's not the top quarter.
Okay, but the upper right is CC bar, so should that be smooth or not in MES?
It should be smooth. It should be Argus in shape.
So it's just statistics?
It's just statistics. So the Monte Carlo statistics are only about 3 times bigger than the data statistics.
And I know you
which
have
is
data,
not
so
optimal, but we have a lot of data. So
have you
that's
scaled,
the point,
for example, sorry, have you scaled the yellow one up in the upper left plot or down?
So the Monte Carlo samples have been scaled, but their relative contributions have been kept the same.
I'm just curious whether the CC bar, is the scale factor on that one less than one or greater than one?
Well, he said the normal overall sum.
I think the CC bar was only produced in about 1.5 times data, so it has larger statistics.
And the brown one is
UDS. So the red one is UDS, the green is B plus B minus, the light blue is tau tau, and the purple is B0 B0 bar.
Did you look at other distributions? I mean, these seem to be the two key variables.
Well, I of course check the other distributions, Monte Carlo versus data agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the main ones
mm-hmm.
that I use.
So I'm still curious about how so much CC bar creeps into your retagging. What happens?
Well, after the tag level, the CC bar isn't so dominant, but the CC bar is more likely to pass the signal side cuts, which enhances the background rate of it.
So, okay. You said few percent of all your tags were wrong, were contamination.
Mm-hmm. But the signal side cuts do a very good job at eliminating backgrounds
sure.
with correctly tagged Bs.
Right.
And
why is it 2%? I'm just curious. I mean, why? What is the limit on? This should be distinctly different the C events. There's a single D, or what are they?
They are different, but there's a lot of them, and they do a better job at making the signal side. And so even though there's a not... Even though the probability of tagging them as having a correctly reconstructed B is fairly low, the signal side cuts it then enhances it. Also, that few percent I mentioned is the uncertainty of how many correctly tagged Bs are in the signal box, but there's still quite a bit of combinatoric background in the signal box. It's just fairly well understood how much that contribution is. Okay, so to repeat, those are the upper limits I obtain. I did not see a significant signal in either of the modes. The upper limit is not sufficient to significantly constrain the large extra dimension scenario I mentioned back in the theory part. But if you use the upper limits I gave, it constrains the R parity violating supersymmetry model parameters as given. They're not very large constraints, but there weren't better constraints before, so it's an improvement. And
so
then
you give that 4.2 plus or minus 5, is that integrating over the whole spectrum rather than focusing on the last bins where you expect the signal?
Have you done a fit to the whole spectrum?
I have not done a fit, but with the statistics I have, a fit is not going to give significantly better result.
How do you get negative branching ratio result?
By having less data seen than the predicted background.
So, for the R parity violating stuff, so this. How did you actually extract that?
I don't have the map anywhere in the talk. But basically, I took the equations in the paper that gave the theory and plugged in the number for the branching, upper limit for the branching fraction to get a limit on the lifetime of the neutralino, and then use that in the cross-section calculation.
Because you told me you didn't run any Suzy Monte Carlo, right? So this is just working kind of backwards from the result in the Suzy model.
Mm-hmm.
And is lambda prime, is this the standard R-parity violating lambda prime?
I think so. And so the only other thing I have to say is when you combine my results with the semi-leptonic results, the following upper limits are obtained. So
coming back to the original excess of dying muons, what does this add anything to that story?
It does not. And, well, since I did not find a signal, it doesn't confirm or significantly make that theory more plausible, because I obtained upper limits on the branching fractions that does somewhat constrain the parameters of that model, but it is still as plausible as it was before.
What kind of limits would you have needed to rule out that interpretation?
I think to start placing serious constraints, I would need limits on the order of 10 to the minus 7th, 10 to the minus 8th, in that range.
Mm-hmm. Need more data.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more data.
So, maybe one day when Super B comes out, this will be done again and something interesting will come out.
I hope I didn't. Other things have been done.
Yeah. Well, other things will be done, but this particular analysis does strongly benefit from a clean environment. So things like LHC will have some problems getting good results for being invisible.
Sure. Did you tell us much about the other analysis?
So it was also done at Babar. It used... the main difference was that it used a different tagging method instead of B to DRD star plus cans and pions. It was B to D or D star L nu.
And their individual results were not as good as you were, or how similar were they?
So their B to invisible result was poorer, their beta invisible plus gamma was comparable.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm having trouble remembering
22 and 4.7 minor 12 and 4.3. But since the two analyses are use completely independent tagging methods, and also much of the systematics are independent, it makes combining the results fairly easy.
So this combination has been approved?
The combination is still pending.
So you'll publish both your result and the combination?
That is the intention.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, let's thank Nick. Other questions?
Mostly I'm just curious, what statistical technique did you use to set the limit?
I used a toy Monte Carlo system. Basically, use a Gaussian to sample the number of expected backgrounds for a given experiment, another for the signal, and then use a Poisson to get the actual number of events seen, and then compare that and do that for various input branching fractions, and based on the number with more events seen than I actually seen in the experiment, you can place an upper limit on the branching fraction.
Is it something that prevents the limit from going negative?
So